Hello, Radioland. You are tuned in to CFUR 88.7 FM, The Fur, and to our newsroom on Due North Radio, broadcasting live on the traditional territory of the Tsleil-Waututh'en First Nation, also on the town site of Prince George, British Columbia. We are following up with some election coverage. We have a candidate on the line, Raymond Rogers, who's campaigning in the Prince George McKenzie riding for the Libertarian Party. How are you today, Raymond?
Great. How about you?
I cannot complain. It's a beautiful, sunshiny day.
Absolutely, it is.
So, Raymond, what made you choose to get involved with the BC Libertarian Party? What do you believe your party has to offer that others do not?
For sure. So, I believe our party has a critical way forward that creates unity and less division, and that was a huge reason I got involved with the party. You know, in BC we have very partisan and division and a lot of politics that are you know, they divide people rather than bringing them together and finding solutions for you know, the smallest minorities, the individuals. And that's a huge thing our party believes in, is you know, forging a path forward where we all have less taxation on us and more freedoms, and we're all able to more freely pursue what it is that makes us happy. And that's what it comes down to, is we don't want one particular party just doing what's good for their party. We want to be able to empower everybody, and that's a huge reason I got involved with the party about 2.5 years ago. So I was obviously planning on running in the scheduled election that would have been next fall, but I managed to get my stuff in order for the snap election, which is something I don't agree with either. But yeah, that was a big reason I jumped in, wanted to get involved. So,
gotcha. So for this election here in October 2020, what do you believe some of the most important issues are, or what do you think people should really be paying attention to?
For sure. So, you know, one issue up here is we still have a big problem with the opioid crisis, and our party is actually the original decriminalization party. We've been advocating since 1986 to decriminalize drugs because we never wanted to see it treated as a crime and should have been treated as a mental health issue, right? So that's a huge thing that we think would provide a lot of, you know, police resources would be able to be better suited, and we could split money into mental health resources. You know, that's a huge change we would like to see. We don't want people to go to jail and to be wasting resources when they're struggling mentally. So that's a huge thing that we would like to see changed. And, you know, it still affects us in the PG McKenzie riding. Obviously, downtown Prince George has, you know, never been the best of places. So that's one change we'd like to make. And, you know, another issue with our party is we would like to end a lot of the government monopolies, like ICBC is a really big one. We don't believe we should be paying the most expensive, you know, insurance in the province or in the country for a fact. You know, we have only one choice to go through for basic insurance, and it should be allowed to be opened up to a private market so they can compete with ICBC and give us all lower costs. So those are two of the big points up here, and you know, mostly just getting government out of the way. That's sort of what it comes down to, and that would be our biggest asset. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So recently, within some of the conversations you've been having with people, and earlier you mentioned about some of the divisions that are being fostered. So the divisions between these mainstream parties, do they thrive off this division? Is that your opinion?
I definitely agree with that statement. For the most part, I'm not a big fan of the current way we elect our MLAs, being the first past the post. I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion that we need some kind of electoral form. You know, I do think the system we have creates a voting for the lesser of two evils, but obviously we can't enact change if we don't have seats in parliament. So I'm personally a fan. As a party, we don't actually hold a status on this. We, as a party, we don't ever have party whip votes, and that's a big thing that we strive on. You know, we don't need to have it bypassed by an executive. We are all free standing and free voting members. And, you know, if we were in an MLA, we would be irrespective of that. And I think definitely the unity or the division that's created because of very polarized politics. And I don't think it's benefiting British Columbians anymore. It just creates a lot of, you know, tension unnecessarily. So
So would you say that one of the potential solutions for the divisions between the mainstream parties as you see them could be solved through electoral reform?
That is definitely one approach. And I know I had mentioned before, but a lot of people don't know this, but if a provincial party in BC gets more than 5% of the total vote, they actually get allowances. Basically, our tax dollars go to them. So my question to you is, you know, if a party is inherently good and it's, you know, getting donations from people that, you know, that believe in it, why do we need to subsidize it with our tax dollars as well? And that's something that a lot of people don't know. And, you know, as a party is the fourth biggest party in BC, we actually ran the fourth most amount of candidates, and we hardly get noticed. And what it is it comes down to we don't believe we should get allowances, you know, for achieving the vote. We think it should be on inherent donations by, you know, people out in your community and your neighborhoods and all that. So, yeah, so that's a little concerning thing to me as a party. And, you know, we just think it's not something we would partake in. But.
Gotcha. So this is a bit of a two-parter. But what's your take on the cooperation then between the NDP and Green Party for the last 3 years? And where do you see partisanship as a real issue specifically in provincial politics?
Yeah, for sure. So, and they actually did manage to do some, you know, inherently good things. Obviously, I don't agree with everything that happened. I wasn't a big fan of the grizzly bear ban myself. But for the most part, they did manage to work together to have a stable government. Unfortunately, they still called it early, but the fact remains is they were still, I think, in my opinion, the Green Party was still whipped to the demands of the NDP, and unfortunately, a lot of people have noticed the failures of the BC NDP to shut down Site C and to do all these things that, you know, that was in a sort of the agreement between the Greens, and it's funny, they still managed to just, you know, have it whipped and not really enact a change. And you know what, it is funny to see it, but unfortunately, I don't think it was overall beneficial to the province, but at least there's people changing. I mean, it's nice to see parties exist besides the main two. I think having two choices is very poor and doesn't help anybody, so it is nice to see other parties and other voices getting, you know, getting nominations and getting potentially on the ballots and into the MLA. So,
yeah. So you mentioned ICBC earlier, and yes. In what ways do you believe ending the ICBC would liberate the people of the province?
Absolutely. So one of the things that is the biggest issue is you don't have a free choice to buy the basic insurance elsewhere. So inherently, it was designed as a good thing to provide, you know, cheap costs, but now we've seen the BC NDP and the BC Liberals both take money out of it to use it to cover other government things. And you know what? I don't trust anyone from it. So what would happen is if you allow other private companies to compete in a market, there'll be more insurers available. There will be more accountability and there will be faster services. ICBC is one of the only provincial insurers in the country that still doesn't have the option to, you know, do it online. It's a complete waste of resources that we have to have all these people in these seats. And, you know, it's a very outdated system and we are the last in Canada to move away from that. So there's a lot more things you could do by allowing private companies. They would create, you know, a more streamlined service for all of us, creating lower costs of insurance and, you know, quicker accountabilities. And that's the biggest thing that would happen. So it's never good to have a monopoly, whether it's, you know, a state monopoly or a private monopoly. So there's no argument to be said that why they can't compete. ICBC can still exist. And if they aren't doing inherently good business practices, and other companies will get people's business in BC. It's simple economics. So that's how that would liberate people in BC to have cheaper insurance.
Gotcha. So that's definitely well and good for people who do drive. But
yes.
Could you speak to the people who don't? Safe, affordable public transit, you know, particularly along our Highway of Tears, is a real issue in the north, right?
Absolutely. So one thing that would actually incentivize bus operators to create companies, because unfortunately we lost Greyhound a few years ago north of Prince George, right? So one thing that would incentivize private operators to run bus companies is if we eliminated a carbon tax. If there wasn't a huge overhanging cost above these places, there would be a lot more incentive for private bus companies to be chartering out to and from Prince Rupert or all the way out to the east of Belmont too. So by eliminating a carbon tax on the fuel and the gas tax, you would have companies saving thousands of dollars per month, potentially. We could have a lot of private companies operating again to have safe transportation out to our remote communities. And that's a huge thing. You know, when we're increasing taxes, there's less and less incentive for businesses to want to open, to want to be entrepreneurs, and to want to actually, you know, expand and to simply put, to, you know, innovate. That's, you know, when you stifle innovation, when you increase taxes, you know, going the other way creates and allows opportunities for entrepreneurs to create innovations. And, you know, in a time of climate change, we want people to be able to be innovating and creating new ways. And, you know, increasing taxes is absolutely punitive, and it's the complete wrong approach to take. So we just believe that by lowering the taxes, we would all be more free to be responsible and accountable, and there would be more business opportunities available for everybody. So,
mm-hmm. And by slashing the carbon tax, it could generate some private enterprise. But how then do you counter the environmental component? And, you know, looking
for
at
sure.
2020 and what we're looking absolutely. At in the future, forest fires and climate change in general, right?
For sure, absolutely. So one thing that would happen is a lot more people who support alternative energy, like electricity and stuff, they would have a lot more taxes back from them because they're not paying a carbon tax and they're not subsidizing oil companies and they're not doing anything, right? Because as a libertarian, we don't believe in subsidizing any companies, you know, believe it or not. You know, if we all have more of our taxes back, you would have a lot more money to buy your electric car if that was what you so choose. And if you didn't, then you can buy a different vehicle. We just don't believe anything should be a mandatory, you know, a ban or, you know, enforced. You know, we're all empowered to make our own decisions as adults, and we will make decisions that are good for us. And simply put, you know, the forest fire issue is a huge one. I know I've mentioned already with the banning of the glyphosate. That should have happened a long time ago. Again, we're talking about a changing climate, and we should be producing and using things locally rather than shipping raw logs away. I mean, I'm not a fan of that at all, and we should also be processing, you know, more plywood and pellets here, because we wouldn't need to be shipping it halfway around the world, wasting a lot more energy resources to do that. It's there's so many processes that can be streamlined when we're removing the taxes and the, you know, the incentive to, you know, do well. And it's just a matter of us all being more knowledgeable about the companies that we support. And that comes down to being educated. And that's something that a government should be doing, is educating us to the risks and the rewards of, you know, all assets and all entities of, you know, the world and the news, and allowing us to decide what we want to do and what we think's best for our bodies and our lands. And you know what? I'm not a fan of the monoculture planting of trees either, and that's what the glyphosate produces. And you know, all my candidates, the other candidates in PG McKenzie, agree. So that's actually one very positive thing of unity I have seen across the board. We all agree that that should have been eliminated. But yeah, so for the most part, it's just essentially you know, empowering the individuals to do what they're needing to do is best. And I know I had mentioned on another talk, you know, I would like to see no income tax for, you know, the lower and the middle people, for people who are making less than 30,000. That's one of the best things you could do to empower those individuals, is if they aren't being taxed to death, they're not going to be so reliant on as many social services, and they're going to be able to lift themselves up a little bit easier. And when they start making more money, then they can become a, you know, a tax-paying, contributing person again. And it's a very different way to look at it, but I think it's a very, very time that we consider, you know, looking at different means of taxation, because it's not working, and our governments are going further and further into debt every hour. And it's concerning, right, for our future generation. We can't keep pushing that onto our next generation. So as a libertarian government, we just want it to smaller, more accountable government, so we aren't paying as much money to unaccountability on all fronts. We want it to be more accountable on the individuals, and we truly believe society will you know, hold each other more accountable when we're given more of our money and time back, and, you know, we wouldn't have to work so much. So that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, is just personal responsibility and accountability. And we all have to do a good job of holding each other more accountable.
Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that last part? I mean, obviously your party supports individual freedoms quite a bit, but when we need that extra bit of assistance to get us out of a rough patch, how does your party plan to deal with social issues such as reforming our province's social assistance plans?
For sure, yeah. So again, we have no plans of cutting any social services immediately. we just understand that they need to exist for people who are actually willing to enact change and to be positive. And again, we're not asking any programs. They just need to exist for people who are wanting to access them correctly. And we need to eliminate the amount of governmental oversight, potentially, as in there's a lot of bureaucracies that are, you know, very mismanaged, and a lot of, you know, office staff and a lot of things that we could eliminate to provide more services. And, you know, we shouldn't be having to, you know, go into more debt to do these things. It's just accessing them is the biggest issue. And we believe that by reducing our taxes, a lot more people would be able to help people. And this is what I'm saying, like, you know, as neighbors to neighbors, we would have more time to help neighbors and help people that are struggling when we're given more of our money back. It's a huge thing that, you know, you have to look at it as, you know, the world can become a better place through paying more taxes or through voluntarily, you know, helping your neighbors and helping people around you. And, you know, I look at it as that way, is, you know, we're not moving forward as a society if we're continuing to tax other people and redistribute wealth. We have to be able to voluntarily want to go and help someone. And, you know, otherwise society isn't really moving forward, in my opinion. So, and that's the biggest thing about being a libertarian, is just that you believe individuals will inherently do good things when we're empowered. And unfortunately, when government taxes us, there's, you know, to the degree that we're being taxed, it's very, you know, concerning, and it's disincentivizing us to, you know, want to do anything. And eventually there'll be no money, and it just leads down a bad road. So social services can exist for sure, but again, if we're not moving towards a world where we're, you know, trying to reduce them while empowering individuals to not need them, then are we just creating, we're just creating a world of dependency. So that's the difference, right? We need to be able to work towards, you know, not needing them in the first place. And then there won't be such a, you know, a dependency on government, meaning bigger government and more taxes. That's why we believe in small government and lower taxes, because going the other way is just, you know, concerning, right? So.
Okay. So I guess further within that, how would we then, or how would the Libertarian Party, address the structural and systemic issues of disenfranchisement and inequitable access to resources if, you know, without provincially administered programs and taxes?
For sure. So one thing that we would see is a lot, again, when I'm talking about opening a lot of the crown monopolies open, we're going to see a lot of, you know, growth in their economic sectors across the province in almost every area. And you're going to create a lot of jobs, and you're going to create a lot of people. And the thing when I talked about the services is there shouldn't be an incentive for people to be able to just survive on them alone. And I think that's the system we have in, you know, in Canada and BC. You know, there's a lot of people who could just make just what they need off of the money the government would give them without there being an incentive to go and work. So by actually, you know, in time, being able to reform the amount of money that's given out to people and actually put it into individuals who are needing it the most, like the elderly and all these things, and the veterans, you know, they're going to be able to get a lot more people to have these jobs that are being created in a lot more free markets. And that's how that occurs. And it's not a change that can happen overnight, but it just comes down to us understanding that people can't be so dependent on these services, and so many people can more than make their ends meet. So maybe it's time to, you know, really look at, you know, what's being given out to some people is more than enough. And then at the same time, some people are getting not enough, you know, they're not able to make their means. But at the same time, we all need to evaluate our, you know, lifestyle choices too, because a lot of people are definitely living beyond their means. And I think that's something that's very concerning in our society. You know, a lot of people are very, very stretched for the resources, and, you know, not through just, you know, poor choices, but sometimes on their own accord. And there shouldn't be a need for that. So, but yeah, that's more or less how it would, in time, would dissolve itself. And, you know, again, we would create cheaper rent because there would be more buildings being built and more, more infrastructure going up, because there's more investment and less taxes. So we would have a lot more opportunities for buildings to be built, where that would drive the cost of rent down, and that would create, you know, more homes for individuals. And these are all great things that would happen with, you know, reducing taxes and getting private investors to invest into projects. It's just a matter of getting government out of the way, because that's inherently the one thing that, you know, can upset people and can actually stumble them up most of the time.
Okay, so perhaps an opportunity to dispel some of the worries that people might have out there.
Yes.
Kind of in like, you know, the extreme perception of, you know, an Ayn Randian future, you know, that kind of stuff. There are people who view libertarianism as really like a right-wing doctrine, but how would you respond to folks who worry that a smaller government would benefit those who in which the system is set up to benefit already?
For sure. Yeah. So basically, we're actually not a right-wing party. We're very centrist. We're just on the side of a libertarian instead of authoritarian. That is the other end. And, you know, we just inherently want gay people to have the same rights as marriage and be able to protect their marijuana plants with guns. It's as simple as that. We don't think people should be able to tell someone what else they can't do with their body. We're actually nothing to do with the right-wing party. We just want a smaller government that is more accountable and more social freedoms. You know, our party is probably the only party that's got gay married couples and, you know, business people and a lot of journeyman tradespeople and all sorts of other individuals, you know, from different races. And it's a great thing to see because we're all trying to fight for freedom for everybody when we're voluntarily, you know, helping our neighbors out and creating grassroots movements at a level. And essentially it's people who are so dependent on government, you know, it's. I believe you need to understand that maybe you're so dependent on government social services is because they put you in that position in the first place, you know, by taxing you to death. And I think for a lot of people, that's a very true statement. And I think, you know, it's definitely time to understand that. And, you know, inherently maybe not engaging with politics isn't, or, you know, maybe in voting for big parties is not to the benefit of the majority of society, and unfortunately it's, you know, it's gotten out of our way. And like I said, it's you know, we definitely get some even confused for liberals half the time. Some people I noticed on my nomination, you know, when I needed to get the 75 signatures for candidacy, a lot of people thought I was a liberal too. And at the same time, we are, right? We believe in a lot of left-wing socialized, you know, under freedoms. You know, we just want people to be a little more accountable and responsible and to be, you know, accountable to themselves. And it's just a matter of understanding that you don't have a right over someone else's land or their body, and they don't have a right over yours. So that's what it comes down to, is personal accountability and understanding that we all know what's best for ourselves. Even if you don't agree with someone, just, you know, make them you know, accountable to their decision. It's kind of simple as that, right? So, you know, it's, we create laws, you know, even a law in BC there, you know, certain individuals don't have to wear a motorcycle helmet because of their, you know, their turban, which is fine. I understand that they can't wear a helmet, but you should be able to let someone else, you know, if they don't want to wear a motorcycle helmet, they should be able to do that. But if they fall and hurt themselves, you know, simply put, they should pay for their medical bill. That's all libertarians want. We don't want different laws for different people. We just want people to be accountable to their own choices, right? And, you know, so if you fall on your motorcycle and you're not wearing your helmet, of course you should pay for that bill. You were the one, you know, silly enough to not do that. So it comes down to, you know, not creating divisive laws, and that's what most governments do. And, you know, when you're only talking about empowering one group of individuals, that's a very divisive, you know, law or grant or whatever it is in its nature, right? And that's what's concerning as a party for us. We don't want any special handouts for anybody, and that's a big misconception. You know, we think people think we want to subsidize all these companies. We don't want to subsidize anything. We just want the free market, and we want individuals to have more choice over what they buy. You know, it's we wouldn't have a lot of more monopolies that we have in our society if we had all had more free choices to spend our money as we please. So again, it comes down to getting government out of the way so we can all be more knowledgeable to where our food comes from, to where all these things are, right? It's just a matter of being responsible for ourselves. And, you know, it's, you know, no one should be able to tell you what you do. It's just a matter of government existing to educate you. And if you choose to, you know, not listen, then you hurt yourself. Well, maybe you should be responsible for those choices, right? So that's what it comes down to. And I don't know, hopefully that makes it clear for you.
Sure. Yeah. And, I guess, you know, to wrap things up, how can people, the audience, the electorate, find out more about you, your platform, and any upcoming events that may be scheduled ahead of the election?
For sure, yeah. So one of the things you could do is just go into the BC Libertarian Party. It comes up in Google, and we've got our platform up there. You know, we want to be able to provide consumer choice in all different sectors, more choice in education, lower taxes that are easier to understand. We want to create more choice in healthcare, creating a two-tier system, which is one of the most beneficial and expedited processes around the world. And Europe is a good model of that. Having a two-tier system is creating faster times and cheaper costs. We want to protect freedom of expression, too. You know, we don't want to be defending racists or bigots or anybody like that. But determining, you know, when one person can't say something is, you know, in itself, that's the very nature of being a fascist, right? So protecting free speech, even if it's speech you don't agree with, is still important for democracy. And then we want to be able to end the prohibition and let police focus on real crimes. I know I mentioned that earlier. You know, we believe police resources could be much better spent on violent criminals, not people who are, you know, voluntarily using drugs. And a huge thing that we would like to see is them go to, you know, be able to buy their drugs from a legal source and not be tainted, and we wouldn't have this overdose crisis, right? So, and then at the end of the day, we want to be reducing government interference, making housing unaffordable. And yeah, so the rest of our platform is on the website. And for myself, you can look me up for Raymond Rogers MLA for PG McKenzie on Facebook. And other than that, I will also have my own candidate profile on the BC Libertarian website. It's also easy to find. You can stroll through us and you can check us out. Again, we're the original End ICBC party, the original decriminalized drugs party, and protecting free speech party. So we've existed since 86, and we do believe it's time for other voices to be heard in the BC legislature. So yeah, I appreciate the time today, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for dropping a line to C4 Radio 88.7 FM. Raymond Rogers, campaigning in the Prince George McKenzie District. Get out there and vote October 24th, 2020. Raymond, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Awesome. Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.